From bureaus worldwide, this is FSN.
Yes, thank you very much, Ollie Barrett. Thank you. Another glorious day in Manchester. Beautiful day today. It's Wednesday, April 10th, 2019. But then you probably knew that. Hope you're in good form. I say that all the time, but I do mean it. Hope you've had a productive old Wednesday wherever you happen to be in the world. This is your Richie Allen Show. Then, let's crack on with it, eh? Let's do it.
Richie Allen.
It's the Richie Allen Show. Broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Welcome to the program. Today, it could be 50 minutes long. It could be 55. It could be an hour. It could be an hour and 10 minutes. I have no idea. It won't be the full 2 hours today, though. It will not be any less packed with interesting information, believe me. Anne Widdecombe, former Shadow Home Secretary, Shadow Health Secretary, and former Prisons Minister, is on the programme today. Caught up with her a little earlier and talked to her about this Brexit madness and the prospect of the UK participating in European parliamentary elections in May. Anne Widdecombe is on the programme. Lots more on the programme as well besides. And as usual, you can participate via the medium of Twitter. All right. Yeah, you know that. Via the medium of Twitter. Old friends around today, around town. Big football match in Manchester this evening. The mighty Reds, the Red Devils, take on Barcelona. I fear abject humiliation. Your presenter isn't going. I don't have access to Manchester United tickets, and those tickets are like gold dust. But friends are around, and they don't have tickets either. So we're looking forward to an evening of footy and old friends. That's the plan this evening anyway. Look, yeah, you heard in the news there, Ollie Barrett saying that it's Bibi Netanyahu again for a fifth term, the right-wing coalition and all the rest of that. I didn't get a chance to reply to an email from him, but Gilad Atzmon, the great jazz saxophonist and writer, sent me a link to an article that he wrote about the Israeli election and Hamas, and it's very interesting, and I think he's hit the nail on the head. Go to gilad.co.uk for that article, and if I get a chance later on, excuse me, if I do get a chance, I'll tweet it out myself. All right, I'll tweet it out. So there you go. Right, shall we have a look at one or two before I jump into Brexit talk? And there have been some interesting developments today. A couple of crazy stories in the paper, which I noticed some of you have been tweeting around today. One of them is about the Fulham seeing as we're talking football today. And that's like hen's teeth on the Richie Allen Show. Hen's teeth. We don't do sport ordinarily unless there's a political angle to it. But a Fulham fan living in California, in the Golden State, is suing a state agency there because they will not allow him have the letters COYW on a personalised car number plate. That's Charlie Oscar Yankee Whiskey. COYW. It stands for Come On You Whites. Any Fulham FC fan will tell you that. I've known some Fulham fans in my time, West London friends of mine. I've lived in London a couple of times over the years. Come on, you whites. But apparently, a state agency in California says that has racist connotations. These are funny little stories that you would normally see at the end of the news. Kind of, and finally, folks, and finally. And you might think, well, it's a nothing story. But it isn't a nothing story. It's this creeping totalitarianism again, isn't it? You know, it doesn't matter that the guy is a university professor. That doesn't make him any better than me or you, by the way. I know that. But it doesn't matter that he's a pretty left-wing type of character and a pretty decent guy. It doesn't matter that he says, look, I'm a Fulham fan. The California Department of Motor Vehicles has said, well, blacks and Hispanics and other ethnic minorities, they might take it to mean, come on, you whites, that it is a kind of a white power message. It is a lunatic asylum now. You see? Who cares what somebody interprets it as? All that matters is that the guy is a fan of Fulham Football Club, which wears a white jersey. There are listeners to this programme who would argue, even if he did mean it to be come on you whites, as in come on you white people, surely that's his business. All mad. Mad, I tell you, mad is mad. So he's not going to have the number plate anyway. Wow. Here's a very interesting story on the back of Gerald Celente's appearance on Tuesday's Richie Allen Show. The Rail Delivery Group has said today that more rail passengers will get and are getting the option to use paperless tickets. Major stations are having the infrastructure for smart ticketing installed, with 9 in 10 journeys soon available in this format. Smart tickets can be bought online and they can be stored on your smartphones or on your smart card. So in future, this isn't new to you. I know you know this, but it's in the news today. In future, you can go through the train station, get to the gate and use your phone, and in you go. The consumer group, which is delighted, and they've said it's a positive step forward. It isn't a positive step forward at all. It isn't. What about privacy? Eh? What about your right to buy a ticket with cash, travelling from Leeds to Liverpool, and not have to show your identification? What about that as an issue? But as usual, these things are sold on passenger convenience, better punctuality for the trains. It's all wonderful, but of course it isn't. Because imagine the Chinese revolution. I mean, we're seeing this social crediting system unfold in China. It's absolutely terrifying. That is not an exaggeration. Imagine it comes here. You've been in trouble once or twice with the police. You've had a dispute with your neighbours. You got pissed and you had an argument in the fish and chip shops there over on Talbot Road on Saturday night. You're a bit of a nuisance. So for the next 2 weeks, you can't travel on the trains. Becomes very easy then, you see. Right, I'm not exaggerating. This is the way it's going. It is already 11 minutes past five. This is your Richie Allen Show. Let's do a little bit of Brexit and let's hear from Anne Widdecombe. We'll get Anne on in about 5 minutes. Love Anne. I've known Anne for many years. So Theresa May has gone. She did Prime Minister's questions today at Westminster and then she flew back to Brussels, where she is pleading for the European Union to agree to another extension of Article 50, another delay to Brexit. Theresa May wants a delay until June 30th, but the European Union, in the guise of several EU bigwigs, including Donald Tusk, the European Council President, they're saying, no, we want to give you up to a year extension with conditions attached. And the 27 leaders will meet this evening. Theresa May will be either gone back home or she will be waiting in another room, and they will decide what to do. It's likely that it will be a long extension. This is dreadful stuff now, isn't it? But isn't it unfolding exactly the way we thought it would? The BBC makes me laugh. The BBC is reporting today, if no extension is granted, the default position would be for the UK to leave on Friday. That's the day after tomorrow, without a deal. There are two chances of that, slim and none, and Slim left town 42 years ago. It's not going to happen that the UK will leave on Friday. So there you go. You know that the withdrawal agreement that May reached with the European Union has been rejected by MPs three different times. You know this by now. Right? Right. So she's there. So what's the protocol? Well, every EU member state needs to agree on any delay before it can be granted. The summit of EU leaders will begin at about, now. It should have begun at 5 o'clock UK time now. And May will present her case and then will go out of the room. As I said, they will have dinner and will come to a conclusion. Alexander Stubb is a former Prime Minister of Finland, and he was asked on Sky News today, what is the preferred outcome?
I would favour a long extension, actually. I think that would give oxygen, breathing space to the UK. And I think that's the preferred option of most of the EU leaders at the moment. No one has malintent on this. We want to give the UK space to come up with a decision. We can all see that Brexit, I guess the game in town today, is like a black hole. We didn't know what we were going into, and there have been votes left and right and all kinds of different options, and everyone wants to avoid a hard Brexit or a total rupture, because that would lead in chaos, and I think it would be bad for the UK and bad for the European Union. So I think long extension is what a lot of people favoured right now.
Yeah, a long extension, and that's what we're going to get. There will be European Parliament elections and all the rest of it, and it's a disgrace, isn't it? We've already had a very long delay of 3 years. You know, we voted to leave in June 2016. It's now nearly mid-April 2019. That's a very long delay, really, isn't it? We could have walked out the following day. Here's a very interesting conversation. I think you'll find it interesting. Now, don't go all snowflakey on me. I know you don't like Ian Duncan Smith, the former leader of the Conservative Party. And I know you've got good reason for not liking him, because as the Secretary for at the Department of Work and Pensions, the Secretary of State at the Department of Work and Pensions, he oversaw some dreadful, horrible, austere, patrician, horrendous things that impacted very negatively on people who most need help. I don't have any time for Ian Duncan Smith or any politician anywhere, okay? Anybody who's currently working as a politician, I should say. But he was on with Adam Bolton this morning on Sky News. It made for very interesting listening. Here is some of the exchange. Adam Bolton, you'll hear him first, the presenter. Adam Bolton brings up no deal. And their conversation is very interesting then.
The problem with leaving without a deal is that repeatedly now, overwhelming majorities of MPs have voted against it.
Yes, but let's be clear. Overwhelming majorities of MPs who came back here are mostly people who didn't want Britain to leave. The British people...
They are electing representatives, and you make your choices, make their choices, and that is what our Parliament wants.
Yes, but there's a level of hypocrisy here, because they voted to trigger Article 50 overwhelmingly. They voted for the vote to pass the power to the British people. 17.4 million people said we're going to leave, and they said we vote to leave on March the 29th. Yeah. What's going on now at the moment is bringing Parliament and MPs into utter disrepute.
No, but I understand.
But Adam, it's really important. The other day, we rammed a bill through. We broke all precedent. Well, we rammed a bill through. We had about 3.5 hours of debate on one of the biggest constitutional issues. We didn't even get to third reading.
We have had bills rushed through.
No, but nothing like this. Nothing like this. This is a constitutional bill, not one of emergency where somebody's going to die. This is a constitutional bill. It's an utter outrage that Parliament is now behaving in such an arrogant way that government becomes impossible.
Well, hang on. The government, as a result of election, doesn't have a majority. So
yes, but Parliament
so the
doesn't.
Function of Parliament is seeking
Parliament
majority.
Parliament is at odds now with the British public. No, well, and this is a very dangerous position.
That's what I wanted to ask you.
Yeah, Ian Duncan Smith is saying it's a massive stitch up. There's a constitutional crisis here. How could that get rammed through Parliament? The Letwin Cooper amendment. How could it happen like that? It's unprecedented. So Adam Bolton, the presenter, is an old Rupert Murdoch boy. He is establishment to the core, as is Duncan Smith, don't get me wrong. Like I said before, we heard that clip. But then Adam Bolton brings up opinion polls. There are opinion polls, says Adam Bolton.
We've also had opinion polls, and opinion polls show there is not majority support
in this
country for leaving without a deal.
Well, actually, Adam, the last two opinion polls showed over 50% favoured leaving without a deal.
No, in the context of a choice.
Yes, but these are all about choices.
If you put the three choices to people, actually, they get a support of about a third of people.
Yeah, well, hang on. When you put three or four of anything,
and in those contexts, actually remain now
Let's be very clear.
Well, it does.
The British people want to see an end to this. And the only end you have is either the Prime Minister's deal passes, and I voted for it last time, all right? Either that deal passes, or they leave without a deal. And constantly suspending that means you renege on the decision. March the 29th was the vote.
There is a third option, as you well know, which is to revoke leaving.
It's not what British people voted for.
Yes,
17.4 million people voted to leave, Adam. Can I just ask you a question? Why in British politics, when 17.4 million people vote clearly to leave the European Union, it is a bunch of puffed up politicians who spend their time saying, do you know what? Yeah. We have a different view and we're going to deny you that choice.
What you're saying is your entire professional life as a politician has been a waste of time.
Well, it will be if this lot doesn't vote to leave.
A bunch of puffed up politicians. These are elected representatives. This is something which you well know. The Prime Minister and others have tried to deliver a Brexit that doesn't damage the national interest over a three-year period, and they have failed. They can't find a decent solution.
Mm. Adam Bolton is doing his best there to muddy the waters and to obfuscate and to dilute what Duncan Smith is saying. I've heard interviewers interrupt their guests often. In my commercial days, I would have been interrupting politicians all the time, but that takes the cake there. Bolton's carry on. It's very interesting. Now, in the next clip, you'll hear Bolton realises that he's coming over, not so much like the devil's advocate, but in fact he's starting to sound like a rampant Europhile. Bolton is aware of this. And he says, well, all I'm saying is that Parliament is sovereign. And that's very interesting because they have a conversation on parliamentary sovereignty. Have a listen.
Well, all I'm saying, I'm not making any argument about what should happen. I'm simply saying that Parliament is sovereign, that part of the whole campaign to leave the European Union was about parliamentary sovereignty, and Parliament could decide to take a different course. And that would be legitimate.
Well, there I disagree with you. People are sovereign. They lend their sovereignty to Parliament for a period of whatever the number of years for that Parliament, and then it is returned to them. But when Parliament returns that sovereign choice to the British people, they are sovereign in making that choice. So they told Parliament, we are going to leave the European Union. There is no point in asking them that binding question and then denying them that answer.
Very interesting that people are sovereign and they lend sovereignty to Parliament for the term of Parliament, whether it's 5 years or 4 years or whatever. Then Parliament says to the people, right, make a decision on whether you want to stay in the European Union or not. And again, he's talking about constitutional issues here. Smith is saying clearly the people have said we want to leave the European Union and it should have happened by now. And Smith repeats that this is a very dangerous thing for politics, for democracy, for the people, for society in general. It's very interesting, this.
Even if it is extremely damaging to the
Well, no,
interest.
These are all speculation. I have to tell.
Even if it's damaging, says Adam Bolton. So give somebody the choice between two directions. Stay in the European Union or leave it. And they say, well, we'll leave. And then you say, oh, well, no, that's not the right answer because it's a very dangerous thing to do. Negating the decision in the first place to offer the referendum, right?
I tell you now, I do not believe that it is damaging. Yeah. I believe that there's a wall of money right now waiting to invest in the United Kingdom. Our assets are massively cheap by comparison with their returns. The pound is low. I've talked to endless financiers who are saying, if you get out, this money is going to pour into the UK because you are a very secure,
meanwhile,
safe
Jacob Rees-Mogg's moving his money out into Ireland.
I don't know what Jacob's doing. He runs
This is a nonsense. You heard Adam Bolton there. Meanwhile, Jacob Rees-Mogg is moving his money to Ireland. This is a lie. It's actually libelous. Now, again, I don't have any interest or any time for Jacob Rees-Mogg, but that's libelous to suggest that Jacob Rees-Mogg blanket is closing up his bank accounts and his businesses and he's moving his money to Ireland. Dreadful stuff by Adam Bolton there. And I'm surprised that Ian Duncan Smith didn't really go for Bolton when he said that about Jacob Rees-Mogg.
He runs a business. I'm honestly, genuinely telling you now, the UK is seen by the global investment teams as an incredibly good investment.
Yeah, Adam Bolton is disgusting. I've been saying that for years and years and years. odious little man, Adam Bolton, there. We'll hear from former Tory MP and Prisons Minister Anne Widdecombe shortly. Just before we do, at Prime Minister's Questions today, Ian Blackford, who's the leader of the SNP's, that's the Scottish National Party, Blackford is their leader in Westminster. He wanted to know if Theresa May had offered the Labour Party a second referendum in return for their support for a withdrawal deal. Now, you know that Labour and the Conservative Party are currently in discussions about a way forward to get out of this Brexit situation. So Ian Blackford is saying, have you offered them a second referendum in return for their support? I think you'll hear the question.
I want to ask the Prime Minister, at any point during these talks, has a second referendum been offered on the government side of the negotiating table? Yes or no, Prime Minister?
My position on a second referendum, the government's position has not changed. The House has rejected a second referendum two times. Now, when we come to a deal, we will have to ensure that legislation goes through this House. Of course, it may be that there are those in this House that wish to press that issue as the legislation goes through. But my position on this has not changed.
Order, order. Theresa May basically said there, when we agree a way forward with Labour, we will put that to Parliament. And if anyone wants to put amendments forward at that stage, like amendments for a second referendum, well, so be it, said Theresa May. You sly old dog, May. No, well, our position hasn't changed. We're not in favour of a second referendum. But when we put a bill before Parliament, after we reach an agreement with old Jeremy Corbyn, if people at that stage want to table an amendment for a second referendum, well, so be it, eh? Eh? Earlier today, I caught up with former Tory MP Anne Widdecombe for her thoughts on all of this. Always interesting. Here's how it went. Anne Widdecombe in conversation earlier on. Anne, welcome back to the programme. What are your thoughts as Theresa May heads off to Brussels to ask for a delay till June 30th? And we understand that Brussels, or at least Donald Tusk, the President of the Council, is going to suggest a much longer delay. Are you a bit depressed this morning, Ms. Widdecombe? How do you feel about
totally,
it?
Totally, because I mean, beyond all doubt, if we have a long delay, we have lost Brexit completely. A long delay, which they patronisingly say is for Britain to rethink Brexit, will just simply leave us in exactly the same situation we are at the moment. Parliament hasn't got the guts to go for a no deal. So what that means is that we will negotiate probably a customs union, which is to say we can't trade with the rest of the world as we had expected to do. And we can't, we will have to obey their rules and laws. So it's no Brexit at all. It is the worst of all possible worlds. And there have been many hands on the tiller in this voyage of disaster, the Prime Minister's principally. But I'm afraid the Brexiteers in Parliament haven't helped, because if they had taken her withdrawal deal and the extra assurances on getting out of the customs union, out of the backstop, then we would have been on the path out, and a future, tougher, braver administration could have got us out of the backstop. But as it is now, what we're going to do is to tie ourselves down to a pathetic Norway-style arrangement, which will leave us with one leg in, one leg out, and no say in the matter.
The European Research Group, Jacob Rees-Mogg and others, might take exception to you apportioning some of the blame to them. They would say that even if you leave the Irish backstop to one side, May's deal ultimately keeps us in all but name anyway. It doesn't stop the problems that we've had with fisheries. It doesn't stop freedom of movement. Ultimately, it's not just a backstop thing. They would say, on a point of principle, we had to keep voting against the withdrawal bill. What do you say to that?
Well, first of all, Jacob Rees-Mogg does not say that. He voted for the deal in the end, voted against it, because his reasoning was exactly the same as mine. I don't like that deal. It's a surrender document. I don't like that deal. But it at least put us on the path to coming out. And Rees-Mogg's position was, I believe, a perfectly reasonable one, which was, OK, no deal is better than a bad deal, but May's deal is better than staying in the EU. And that was the hierarchy of deals, if you like, that he signed up to. So if any Brexiteer said to me it's unfair to blame us, I would say we'll argue that one with Jacob Rees-Mogg, who is an arch-Brexiteer.
What do you reckon to the prospect of the country taking part in European parliamentary elections in May? It's astonishing to think that we're at this stage. I've always put my, you know, I've always put my opinion out there as a broadcaster. I've never hidden behind impartiality. I think as an Irishman, I know how devastating for democracy the European Union is. The UK made the right decision to leave. The idea that next month there will be elections in this country, Anne, it's astonishing. What do you think will happen?
Well, it's not just astonishing, it's humiliating. I mean, we have been internationally humiliated by an inept and incompetent Prime Minister, by a Parliament which has set its own will against that of the people, and by, regrettably, Brexiteers who didn't know the best possible option that they could have taken out of a lot of very bad options. So, I mean, you know, there's an awful lot of people to blame in this, but you say it's astonishing, I say it's humiliating. And I think that there is going to be a spin-off before that. I would look very, very closely at what happens as we're campaigning for the local elections, because I think voting could easily become a minority occupation, with people saying, what's the point of this? There was a record turnout at the referendum. People were voting who'd never voted before. There was a clear result, and Parliament has just made a rude gesture to it and done nothing at all. So why bother voting? Why put your cross on a ballot paper?
You reckon,
I think, will be the mentality of a lot of people.
You look at, it's a very good point you're making there, because if you leave aside the European parliamentary elections, of course we have local elections across the country in May. You think that voter turnout is going to be minimal, to say the least?
Well, it was very low in the Newport West by-election. Now, by-elections traditionally get quite an interesting turnout. It fell from 67 to 37%. That's a huge drop. And I think that is an indicator of times to come. I know from talking to people who've been campaigning on the doorsteps, people are saying they can't be bothered. They can't be bothered. Yes, I think what you say is right. I think there will be a very low turnout indeed.
Yeah,
now, when it comes to the European elections, I wouldn't be at all surprised if everybody just decided to vote for Farage's party, just to show the government what people want.
What about Remainers voting strongly for Remain candidates? It's often mentioned in the media that those 15 and 16-year-olds back in 2016 have now come of age. Do you see a big boost for Remain parties in the European elections?
Well, one can hope that now they've come of age, they might also have got a little bit more wisdom.
Yeah.
But no, my prediction would be, if things stay as they are at the moment, and things change every 2 minutes in this business, but if things remain as they are at the moment, my prediction would be there'll be a very large protest vote for the Farageists.
You're a great media personality, Anne. That's not in any way a patronising thing. You are marvellous, the things you've done since you retired from politics, although I don't think you ever really retire from politics.
I think that's true.
I think that is true. But no, you have, and I know you've worked and do work for the BBC, and it's a great institution and has been historically. But how much blame can we lay at the feet of the national media in terms of the way they've spun things since the referendum in 2016? It seems, and I might get a smack for saying this, but it seems that outside of the Telegraph maybe, and maybe the Express, the media, particularly the BBC, has been very choosy in the language it uses in terms of when it talks about Brexit, things like crashing out and disastrous no deal and all of that. Does the media have something to answer for, Anne, as this all falls apart?
Yes, I think it does. I mean, it doesn't have as much to answer for as the government, for heaven's sake, but it still has quite a lot to answer for. I think you're right. Even the Daily Mail has gone fishy on this subject. And the Express and the Telegraph are about the only two news outlets that haven't. But I think the BBC in particular, every time they've got a bit of good news on the economy, the atmosphere is, well, this is despite Brexit. And every time there's a bit of bad news, Brexit always comes into it. And I think there has been, I mean, they're institutionally left wing anyway, and I think they're institutionally Remain. But what I would also say is that it was the job of the Brexiteers to convince the country, and they had plenty of time to do it, that no deal would not be a big disaster. Instead of which, they wasted and wasted and wasted about a year trying to get 48 letters so that they could have a vote of confidence in the Prime Minister, which they then lost. And then hamstrung themselves because we can't have another one for another year. Now, wasting all that time when what they should have been addressing was a big issue, which is the nation needs to know whether no deal really is a disaster. Now, my view is that it is not, and that it can be properly contained. Europe says it's ready for no deal. We've had 3 years to prepare for no deal. Where should be the problem?
Where should be the problem? Just a couple of quick questions, Anne, for a couple of minutes more. I know you're a stickler for the old 10 to 12 minutes, and I know you've got other calls coming in.
And the next one's an Irish one as well.
And the next one's an Irish one as well. We're very interested in this. I mean, I'm based here in the UK, but we have huge interest in this, of course, as well. Looking at, are we seeing, in terms of the behaviour of the European Union, its chief characters, Verhofstadt, yes. Tusk, are we seeing, have they revealed themselves to be that which we feared and which led us to want to vote to leave anyway? They've behaved abominably, haven't they?
Oh, yes, and I've spoken to plenty of Remainers who say that they would vote leave next time if they had another referendum, for the simple reason that we have been treated this badly, and what it shows is the real EU's nature, and anybody who had any doubt at all about whether this is a reasonable institution in which we will be able to mould or have a big say in the future, then the behaviour of the last 2 years should have convinced everybody that the EU is extremely dictatorial. Actually, it's rather a nasty institution.
And getting worse, Anne, right? I mean, its plans for more centralisation of power in the coming years are horrendous, right?
Well, I mean, if you think of the speech that Juncker's made not very long after the referendum, a speech that provoked Nigel Farage to say, well, thank heavens we're going, in the European Parliament, he said it. It was a speech extolling federalism. Well, I don't think Britain wants to be part of a federal Europe, and the people have made their will known, and it was up to the government to implement that will.
Final question, Anne. Thanks for coming back on, by the way. Ian Duncan Smith was on with Adam Bolton on Sky News this morning. You might have seen it, you might not.
I didn't.
Is there a constitutional crisis in this country? He talked about the ramming through of the Letwin Cooper amendment. There was discussion of the conduct of the Speaker, John Bercow. Has centuries of tradition and parliamentary procedure just been ripped up to suit this Remain agenda? And if so, how serious is that?
I wouldn't say that the Constitution's been ripped up, but I certainly think that John Bercow has played with fire occasionally. I think Ian is right, but the constitutional crisis that I see is a different one, which is you've got Parliament going one way, people going the other way, and no means at the moment of resolving that dichotomy. And I think that is very, very important, because you do not want to arrive at a situation where you've got a serious clash between Parliament and people over a constitutional issue of all things.
Final question, 10 seconds, Anne. Will the United Kingdom ever leave the European Union properly?
Not in the near future.
Anne, thanks so much for coming back. Love speaking with you. Have a great day, and thanks for doing it.
Thank you.
Yeah, the lovely Anne Widdecombe on the Richie Allen Show, recorded a bit earlier on today. Yeah, she's not too happy about it. The prospects of parliamentary elections at the same time we would be holding local elections, of course, local government elections, in May. Lots of tweets on this. I will read them in a minute, I promise. For my American listeners, I love a bit of US jargon, bit of lingo, bit of US lingo there. The European Union is batting 1,000. It's batting 1,000. What does that mean, Richie? Well, I've said this 1,000 times myself, ironically. The European Union has lost a referendum 9 times. 9 times, Mrs. Bueller. 9 times the European Union has been beaten in a member state referendum. 9 times. And every single time they lost, the result was reversed later on. And I've talked about this so many times. The Danes voted against the Maastricht Treaty. Right? The French, the Irish rejecting Nice and then rejecting Lisbon. I mentioned the French already. The Dutch voting down the EU constitution. The Greeks. Do you remember this? Gerald Celente brought this up last night in 2015. This was the greatest act of betrayal in the history of betrayals. You don't get worse betrayals in the WWE. When the Greeks, in the form of Alexis Tsipras and Herman Munster, that goon of a former finance minister, Yanis Varoufakis, do you remember when they told their own electorate to vote against the bailout conditions proposed by the European Union? Do you remember this? Yanis Varoufakis, Herman Munster and Alexis Tsipras said to the Greeks, vote against it, we'll stand up for you. The Greeks duly voted against the horrendous terms of the bailout. What happened? A few days later, Alexis Tsipras signed off on the austerity package. The European Union is batting 1,000. And it's not going to change now. It doesn't matter that 17.4 billion people, billion, did I say billion? Not in the UK. 17.4 million, million people said, we want out of this fascist dictatorship. It matters not. We're going nowhere. This is Elvis Presley, the king on the Richie Allen Show.
Well, I quit my job.
Elvis Presley on the Richie Allen Show, guitar man. The time coming up for 19 minutes to the top of the hour. That's one of the greatest tunes of all time, that. Elvis. Right, a few comments then. It is your Richie Allen Show, by the way. It is live on richieallen.co.uk, Fab Radio 2 in Manchester, triggerwarning.tv, and TuneIn Radio. There's nothing like it. Moinga tweets, I agree with Anne Widdecombe, Richie. Humiliating is the best way to describe Brexit right now. Susan tweets, how you doing, Susan? It is a pantomime show for the easily fooled, sadly, says Susan. Sean Hinchcliffe, how you doing, Sean? Richie, I dislike all Tories. However, Anne Widdecombe is absolutely spot on. Thanks for that, Sean. I've always liked Anne. You know, a very, very sound constituency. Politician, not saying that I agree or have agreed with everything she said or done in her career, but she's a sincere woman and entered politics for the right reasons and did the best she could for the people she represented during her time in politics, as best as I could see it. Faisal, good point, Faisal, regarding something Anne said. BBC institutionally left wing, says Faisal. Maybe Blairite right wing in disguise, but cheerleading for wars doesn't seem very left wing to me, says Faisal there. Appreciate that, Faisal. Keep those tweets coming in at Richie Allen Show. Tiger tweets, the day after Norway voted not to join the European Union, investors were queuing up to pump in funds to that economy. Cheers, Tiger. Terminal 4U tweets, Richie, it doesn't really matter what happens now. The fuckwits have removed our major bargaining chip for something we didn't ask for in the first place. Example, no deal. And for Prime Minister, says Terminal 4U. Cheers for that, mate. I appreciate those comments. Patrick says, how much is Adam Bolton being paid by Murdoch and others to bolster the cabal line? Disgusting individual, says Patrick. They earn good money. They do. I know. There was a time, moons ago, when I earned good money myself in commercial radio. Diane tweets, Diane Portlaoghaige, well, very close anyway. Rich, you did say there would be no Brexit. I never thought it would be this bad, though. I bet people are furious. They are, Diane, but what are they going to do? Hi to Gail. Hi to David Stanford as well. Hi to Matt, who's in Yorkshire, and he's a new listener to the programme. How you doing, Matt? And to Jason, who's tweeted me a BBC story about train tickets being chipped in your hand in the future. I was talking about contactless earlier, and Jason says, better ticketless and on your phone than a chip in your hand. That's coming down the line as well. There's no doubt about that, Jason. Let's move on. Coming up for quarter two, six, on Wednesday, April 10th. I had to check there. I had to look at my Simpsons calendar. Love the Simpsons. Got a present of a Simpsons calendar for Christmas there. Or for my birthday, in fact, it was. The old future Mrs. Allen there. You can't beat it. You can't beat it. Here's an interesting story. We're going to get away from Brexit. And I am going to go over the top of the hour. How long I'll be with you then after that, I don't know. Back to 2 hours tomorrow. Shut up about it. Shut up. You'll take what I give you. Yeah, I'm a big man when I'm here by myself. The kids are taking charge of climate change. Huh? Pesky kids. The kids are taking charge of climate change. This is a story on foreignpolicy.com, which is a widely read online magazine. Teenagers around the world are protesting in unprecedented numbers and they are making governments nervous. Nervous. Let me read a little bit of this. The Fridays for Future International School Strike, which took place on March 15th, was breathtaking. An estimated 1.6 million to 2 million people, teenagers and preteens, gathered in thousands of cities and towns in more than 125 countries to demand their political leaders meet existing climate goals. As intended, they grabbed the world's attention. Do you remember this, dear listener, when these smelly little bastards took a day off school? They went on the Mitch. They went on the Mitch. Is that what you say? They went on the Mitch. In Waterford City, where I come from, we say they went on the duck from school. How many of these children really care about or understand climate change? And how many of them just wanted a day off? Anyway, the magazine article goes on. In a few months' time, the climate strikes, they went on strike, you see, have already reframed the political debate in several countries. The leading figures, including Germany's Luisa Neubauer, and Sweden's Greta Thunberg, have thrived on primetime talk shows, and their words and photographs are splashed across the dailies and the blogosphere. These are schoolgirls, Luisa Neubauer, and Sweden's Greta Thunberg. They're everywhere. Now, the most recent rallies on Friday, April 5th, happened in 54 towns across Germany, as well as weekly strikes in nearly 450 other locations across 68 countries. Far from a fad, these climate protests promise to have a very lasting political impact. Europe's political class has been at pains to show that they are down with the kiddies. I'm diverging now away from the article, right? It says Europe's political class is at pains to show it is moved by this unprecedented outpouring. They want to show that they're down with the little kiddies and the little kiddies' concerns about climate change. Angela Merkel of Germany, the Chancellor, twice paid the young people praise in recent weeks. She's called for a radical shift to electromobility and hydrogen propulsion. Angela Merkel wants to decarbonise the country's notoriously emissions-heavy transportation sector. The movement's leaders, these little kiddies, Greta and Luisa, have met with German cabinet ministers, the French president, the EU Commission, the UN, Barack Obama, the Pope. In civil society, there has been plentiful solidarity. Parents are forming groups to join the kiddies. We now have parents for the future and teachers for the future. Parents, future. They'll have slogans and songs and everything in no time at all, I suppose. Wow. Climate change protesters are bemused by this. Volker Quaschning is a professor of renewable energy systems in Berlin. And he's very bemused. He's saying, the kids are saying what we've been saying for 20 or 30 years, but they're getting a hearing that we never got. Keep that in mind. Think about that. The kiddies. They're selling this bollocks through the kiddies, the little ones, because it's their future. It's not your future, dear listener. You're over 50. You fucked up the planet. It's your fault. You've no future. It's their future. Right. Internationally, it's becoming a decentralized movement and it is thriving on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Telegram and WhatsApp. Isn't that very interesting? In the week when we are told that we will have an online harms regulator to stop people talking about vaccines and God knows what else on Facebook, these movements of kiddies against climate change, they're thriving right across social media. Today, the Green Party MP, the only one, making her the leader of the Green Party, the Judean People's Front, basically. You know, the Green Party and the Lib Dems couldn't field a football team in the pubs league between them. That's how absolutely destroyed those parties were in recent elections. Anyway, Caroline Lucas had a question on this today for Theresa May. A question on the kiddies and climate change. Caroline Lucas!
Caroline Lucas!
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. This Friday, young people across the UK will again be calling for more urgent action on the climate emergency. So far, every party leader except the Prime Minister has agreed to meet members of this extraordinary uprising. Following a speech at Davos and a meeting with Pope Francis, 16-year-old Greta Thunberg from Sweden, who sparked this global uprising, will visit Parliament on the 23rd of April. So my question is very simple. Will the Prime Minister agree to meet Greta and hear direct from the young people when she's here?
Yes, yes, Theresa May, will you meet with little Greta, who is the authority now on climate change, this little Swedish kid? Will you meet her? And will you listen to her, Theresa May?
Yeah. Can I say to the Honourable Lady, she says, will I meet here direct from young people about the issues that they're concerned about in relation to the environment and climate change? I do that, and this gives me an opportunity to congratulate a school in my own constituency, St Mary's Catholic Primary School, that has won 5 Green Flag Awards in the last 10 years, that last year won the first ever National Green Heart Hero Award. And I can assure the Honourable Lady that I hear young people often tell about the importance of climate change. This government has a fine record on climate change. One day, the Honourable Lady will actually stand up in this House and welcome the efforts this government has made.
Yeah. So you heard Greta Thunberg get a mention again. She was mentioned in the articles. She's mentioned in the press. Greta Thunberg. Who the hell is Greta Thunberg?
Who the fuck is PFC William T. Santiago?
No, it's Greta Thunberg, Jack. Who's Greta Thunberg? Well, she's a Swedish schoolgirl, and according to Wikipedia now, because she's got a Wikipedia page, she's a climate activist. She's got the ear of the Pope, and world leaders came out of nowhere. Greta Thunberg. She looks like Heidi from the TV show Heidi many years ago. Ah, children, you know. Children! We're entering this era. I've talked about this quite a bit on the programme. I'm very het up about this. I get very emotional about this. We've entered, not we are entering, we have entered an era where facts, F-A-C-T-S, facts, no longer matter. What matters, only what you believe. So, it doesn't matter that Greta Thunberg and Louisa, the little German kid, couldn't find an elephant in the snow with diarrhea. It doesn't matter that they know not that climates have changed for millions and millions of years. It doesn't matter that it used to be much, much, much hotter than they are warning it will become. Think about that. They're saying a degree and a half, 2 degrees, 2 degrees, Sheila Ferguson, 3 degrees, it's going to be 3 degrees, in a few years' time, 3 degrees. It used to be so hot in this country that grapes were grown in Yorkshire. There has been no mean warming for 20 years. That's no average increase in temperature in 20 years. We've had sea level rises going back millions of years that were hundreds of metres high. Hundreds of metres. It isn't carbon dioxide, it's solar activity. It's that big, as Ian Plimer once said, the great geologist, it's that big yellow ball in the sky. And some of the anomalous weather might be driven by geoengineering, it might be, and it might be driven by weather manipulation using technology. That's also very possible as well, but it isn't carbon dioxide. We're coming out of the last ice age. We haven't left the last ice age. This is true. But the narcissistic little fucking snowflakes who love fame, who crave it, who crave attention, who live on Facebook and crave validation online from dawn till dusk, taking their pathetic fucking selfies, posting them on Twitter and Instagram, the little snowflakes are growing up to believe it isn't what is true that matters, it's what I feel. The truth is irrelevant. It's what I think. And if I can become famous on Facebook for standing up to something that isn't actually happening, wonderful. You know, Sky News this morning, dear listener, was in Aberdeen, which I've never visited. Been to Edinburgh, I've been to Glasgow, never been to Aberdeen. I believe it's beautiful on the coast there. Speaking to teenagers about Brexit. You know, I was watching this morning. Sky News reporters were asking teenagers about Brexit. And they're not like 12 and 14-year-olds. They're 17, 18, 19-year-olds. Sky was asking them. And they were coming off all indignant about the fact that we have to remain and all the rest of it. And not one of them had a clue, you know. And I just wished for a minute I could inhabit the body spiritually of the Sky reporter to ask a few questions to the teenagers just to totally fucking humiliate them. Questions about Jean Monnet, questions about the Treaty of Rome, questions about the Lisbon Treaty, questions about the European Parliament, about the commissioners, about Donald Tusk, about elections, just to highlight their abject ignorance on the subject. I grew up somebody determined to learn about the world geopolitically. And as I grew up, I was a humble guy. I would never offer an opinion on something unless I had done a little bit of research into it or had some knowledge or had spoken to somebody or had read something. Today's narcissistic snowflake, this tidal wave of moronic kids that are going to inherit this world, have no such compunctions about embarrassing themselves when asked an opinion on something they know nothing about, because facts don't matter. All that matters is what I feel. It's crazy, isn't it? Speaking of snowflakes, this has been going on for a month. It's hilarious. Anti-racism protesters are still occupying a building at Goldsmiths University in London. They've been there for 28 days now. And they say, we're not going anywhere until our demands are met. They've taken over Deptford Town Hall, which is where the senior management of Goldsmiths University normally work. And the students are protesting at what they call interpersonal and institutional racism. 20 snowflakes, right? They took this action after they say the institution failed to respond to their complaints. They said a candidate in an upcoming student election had been racially abused. That's what they said. They didn't prove it. It was just conjecture. We've got a candidate in the student election and he was racially abused. No proof, so the university didn't act. So they've taken over a building at Goldsmiths. You've heard it right. 20 days, 28 days they've been there. Do you want to hear from one of the protesters? Her name is Amal Beder or Amal Beder. I don't care which it is. Let's have a listen to why they're occupying Goldsmiths University.
Our protest is the first ever black student, ethnic minority students led occupation in Goldsmiths history.
And that's what it's all about, really. She's given the whole game away right there. It's the first ever exclusively black protest at Goldsmiths University ever. And I'm on telly speaking to RT. Isn't it wonderful? Me, 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 me. What are you there for, love? What are you protesting, really?
We are now on day 28.
fucking day 28. Can you believe it? Why can't they just hose them out of there? Turn on the water cannons.
And we are currently supported by IWGB.
Who's that?
Unison, UCU, Majid, the mayor of Sheffield, Black Lives Matter UK.
Black Lives Matter UK are involved.
And we are in communication with the John Hopkins University, and we are demanding all other universities to also support, to stand up.
We are demanding that all other universities support us. We're demanding it. We are demanding it. Where's Jack Nicholson again? Who the f*** is... This woman, we're demanding that other universities do what we tell them to do and stand up for the ethnic minority students at Goldsmiths.
Up, rise up and fight racism.
Rise up!
On campus, because there's an institutional problem that's happening.
An institutional problem on campuses. It isn't, by the way. It isn't. There is no institutional racism on campuses in the United Kingdom. None.
Happening not only locally, but globally.
Globally!
Goldsmiths make a lot of claims, and us, the BME students, have been...
BAME students. Oh. Black and minority ethnic students, she means.
...in here, and we, our demands are a response to the inadequate support that they claim to be making. The well-being support which they claim to be providing does not serve black students or international students. Why are international students coming up to the occupation and supporting the demand, saying that whenever they seeked counselling, they were told they need to learn how to speak English and come back?
So international students went for counselling and were told, you don't speak English, we can't help you. Okay.
How many black counsellors are available to speak to black students?
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Going through something like this on campus.
So we must specifically hire black counsellors to treat the problems of black students, because black students can't express themselves to white counsellors or Asian counsellors or Latino counsellors. Is that what's really going on? Is that why you've occupied part of a building for 28 days? I thought there was something serious going on.
And they can't speak up and they need emotional support, yet the counsellors do not understand what they're saying. If anything, label them as making things up. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, they're out there. These people are out there. This is the problem. Turn the hoses on them. Hose them out of the department that they're occupying and get on with your business. What is Goldsmiths University saying about this? This really cheeses me off. Here's a response read by an RT producer, that's Russia Today, reading the response from Goldsmiths.
Goldsmiths has issued a comprehensive response to the protesters' demands, including plans to provide mandatory training for staff on issues of diversity and race, additional investment in student wellbeing services, conducting an audit of the experience of BAME students and staff, and a consultation on the historic iconography of the building.
A consultation on the historic iconography of the building. That might ring a bell, and you might remember Oxford University students, snowflake students, ethnic minorities, trying to have a statue of Cecil Rhodes chucked out of the university. Do you remember that? So Goldsmiths has capitulated, basically. We're going to provide diversity training for all the staff. Why? And we're going to have a consultation on the iconography of the building. So a few black students and maybe a few Asian students and one or two international students who don't speak fucking English are annoyed at a statue of somebody from, I don't know, colonial times. And, well, if they're in some way triggered by it, well, we'll take it down. The university has also said it's committed to reviewing its hate crime reporting processes. And the university has also said it will take very seriously the protesters calling for a rethink on the Eurocentric curriculum. I'm sure there are thoughts on this. David says, send in the SAS. Yeah. You know, I was so sick, I went to university a couple of times. I remember things being so different on campus. I remember people having very strong opinions about politics and about life. But I remember those people being very keen to to find those who opposed them to have an argument with them. Arguments were much beloved by the student body. This is the way it used to be. They loved it. Nobody would be deplatformed because they said that they, you know, didn't agree with self-identification for trans people. Nobody would be deplatformed for that. Nobody would be deplatformed if they said something stupid about an ethnic minority, something about whatever, you know. They would be dragged before a lectern, an audience would be put in front of them, and they would have a debate about it. It's quite extraordinary, isn't it, what's going on? And it's the microcosm. You know, it isn't an isolated example here. This is the society we are creating for our own children and our own grandchildren. A society where facts and truth doesn't matter a damn. All that matters is what you think, what you feel, what you believe. A society where you will no longer ever have to be confronted by something that you dislike or that you find offensive. Big Brother, the nanny state, will ensure that you can traverse life without ever seeing something which you find abhorrent, awful or challenging. This is why we're having the online harms white paper. The state again saying we will protect our citizens from things that might cause them offence. They've renamed offence now, they're calling it harms. Because offence is harmful. The great Australian comedian, we've played the clip, I won't play it now, we've played it many times. The guy with the long hair and the beard, Steve is his name, isn't it? The Australian comedian, you know, does a great routine talking about the subjectivity of offence. You choose to be offended by something. You choose to be offended. That's crazy. These are crazy times. You have 20 students holed up in a room at a university for a month over nothing because black students can't go and speak to a black counsellor, because international students who don't speak English can't speak to the counsellors because the counsellors don't speak those languages. You know? So we'll go and protest. We won't politely ask the university, listen, how about you try and get a bit more proactive? How about when you're hiring counsellors in the future that you look at languages as a possibility? So maybe in a few years' time, when you're hiring counsellors, you look for those who maybe speak French, maybe speak Spanish, maybe or Italian or Portuguese or whatever. No. We'll go on strike. We'll take over the building. We'll demand that you change the curriculum away from a Eurocentric curriculum and that you make it more tailored to what we want. It's absolutely maddening to me. Maddening that rather than tell them to fuck off and get on with your classes and studying for your exams, or leave and go somewhere else. Rather than do that, the university acquiesces. It rolls over and panders to these monumental Muppets. Isn't it extraordinary, isn't it? That's where I'm going to leave you today. Omari has tweeted, let's get Omari in, because Omari says, Rich, I'm a black man and I'm offended by these snowflakes. Gotta shelter my kids from this nonsense. What I will say is that this isn't organic, the whole thing. Aldous Huxley has lectures on it saying all this will happen, so I'm not shocked at all, says Omari. I'm glad to hear that, Omari. I've said it before. I don't encounter prejudice. At least I haven't encountered any in my lifetime. Right? I'm not saying that no white person has ever encountered or hasn't ever encountered prejudice. I'm not saying anything. I've never encountered it. But I wouldn't want the state or the pillars of the state to intervene on my behalf and say, we'll protect you, Richie, from having to listen to this or from having to see this or from having to experience that. No, I'll take it. I'm a big boy. I can look after myself. If I were to experience prejudice, if I were to experience harassment in terms of verbal stuff from people and stuff like that, I can deal with it very simply. I can obliterate those people from my life by either blocking them on social media or in real life just ignoring them. You know, I was lucky enough to work with people over the years from all different types of background. I've worked with black people. I've worked with people from the Far East. I've worked with people with every different type of sexual orientation you can think about. And to a man and woman, none of them, they would be absolutely disgusted by what's going on now, by this sort of conduct, this sort of behaviour. And they would say, yes, Richie, while genuine racism has to be addressed and must be dealt with, this sort of thing, this nanny stating, this snowflake behaviour is an indictment, really, on the work done by people in human rights movements and in civil rights movements over the years, for people to be treated the same, to be treated as adults, to be treated as human beings. What these students want is they want a world where they're not treated like a human being, where they're wrapped up in cotton wool, and where they, like a baby, can scream and bawl and roar and moan and whinge, and the state jumps to their every demand and tries to satisfy their every whim. That is the way to totalitarianism. And I'm going to leave you there. It's coming up for 11 minutes past the hour. Thanks for listening today. Back with the full programme tomorrow at 5 p.m. UK time, the usual time, of course. Thanks for your tweets on this today. A lot of tweets came in on that segment of the programme. I'll copy and paste some of them and I'll read them tomorrow. Big shout out to Anne Whittaker for coming on the programme. Enjoy the rest of your Wednesday. In the meantime, look after yourselves and one another. Going to leave you with the Beach Boys. Alrighty, have a great rest of your Wednesday. Until tomorrow then, it's bye for me. Bye now.